What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Ditto Podcast. Matt and Ash here. Super excited to have you back for part two of Deliberate Practice. But before we get started, really important tradition, Matt. I heard you have a dad joke for us.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to just forewarn, I don't know if it's super funny, but it is a dad joke, and sometimes dad jokes are just kind of stupid. So you ready?
Yep, let's hear it.
Okay, so I was in an interview the other day, and the interviewer, it was a sales position, for a sales position. The interviewer goes, I want to see you sell me something, right? Like, let's do a little case study. Let's do improvisation. Let's see how you do. He's like, so here's my laptop. I want you to sell me my laptop. And I took his laptop and I left and I went home. And a few hours goes by and he calls me, of course. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to need my laptop back. And I go, I'll give it back to you for $250.
That's a good one.
That's what I sold him.
Right? Very like he smart. Was asking me to sell him. You took it very
That's
literally.
That's my dad joke. I know. Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that one. I like the story jokes. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Okay. Well, thank you. Nice. Thank you for laughing.
Yeah, of course. Always. All right. So last episode, we left off on deliberate practice. We talked about established training techniques, existing skills as building blocks, pushing the envelope, and then we ended with enhancing mental representations. Mm-hmm. So we have three more that fall in line with this deliberate practice.
Experts acronym.
Yes. Responding to feedback. That is where we left off.
Yeah. So this technically is our fifth one out of the seven, right?
Yes.
Again, for those that are interested, if you missed the first one, go back and watch it. Anders Ericsson, David Eccles, they're essentially the two leading researchers, especially Anders Ericsson, around this wonderful concept of deliberate practice. And I mentioned a book last time called Peak by Anders Ericsson. Fantastic book if you want to go check that out. So, experts acronym. We've gone over the first four. Here's the fifth one, the R, and that is responding to feedback. So what this is, Ashley, is essentially about being able to process and use or even utilize internal and external feedback to make adjustments. So internal essentially is, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on in that inner terrain of yours? That's because oftentimes, again, like I mentioned last time, we kind of know what we need to do. It's whether we're actually listening to it and responding to it in an effective way internally. And then, of course, you have coaches and you have instructors and you have teachers that are telling you on the external feedback what to do. So some examples could be like after you're seeing film. I know in sport you watch a lot of video. You watch a lot of film of you playing. So you're seeing that and you're seeing where you've messed up. And you're seeing where you need to adjust to get better moving forward, right? And then coaches' cues and instructors' cues of chest up or explode through your hips. If you're especially in the weight room, you hear that a lot. Or you need to be on this side of the field, put yourself in a better position. You're in a really crappy spot. The ball's clear over there when you should be here, et cetera. And then you're making those immediate corrections, whether it's, again, watching film or in the actual moment. An interesting one that is happening all around sports right now. And it's so funny to see, especially male athletes with like sports bras on. They're using these heart rate data modifying what the pace of run is and blood pressure. And they're analyzing in the moment internally what's going on. And so if we have a target heart rate or if we have a target, whatever, these scientists, these strength coaches, these staff can analyze, oop, too high, we need to tone it down a little bit, or we're not enough, we need to speed things up. So of all those examples, and really of both internal feedback, Ashley, and external feedback, what's been your experience, and especially from a positive light, how have you developed a good relationship with feedback?
Yeah, I think this is a good one. Yeah, there's so many different directions you can go with it. But I mean, we also wear GPS trackers and heart rate monitors for every practice and every training. And that feedback is really important for like our coaches and our strength and conditioning sports scientist staff, because they can set certain metrics. But also that kind of internal feedback of how we're feeling is just as important, if not more important, in my opinion, because you have these numbers and you have these metrics. They're meant to set like these guidelines to kind of help us from overtraining or undertraining and making sure that we get the correct stimulus that we need to prepare for the games. Mm-hmm. But every single player and every single athlete is very different. So I may be able to handle something different than another athlete may be able to handle. I may be able to handle like longer accelerations, but when it comes to the shorter like excels and decels, I might not be as equipped to do that as someone else on my team who maybe plays in the midfield. You also have different positions in the field, and we all are required to do different actions a different amount of time. So like, yeah. I think having this external feedback is really, really important and really, really helpful. And the game has moved in such a positive direction, and we've seen people be able to do amazing things. But that internal feedback and that internal dialogue is also just as important when it comes to feedback as like a player, like based off of like my performance. I think all of us probably have different relationships with feedback, depending on how how it's articulated and how it's given. I think for me, I've established a good habit of always trying to welcome feedback, but also being able to like filter out helpful feedback and unhelpful feedback. Because especially when you get to this level, you're getting lots of feedback from some from good sources like your coaches or your teammates, and some from not so good sources. And right. So I think being able to like filter out that feedback and recognize what's helpful feedback and what's hurtful feedback is also very important. But I think feedback in general is good. But I also think there's a space for sometimes not having too much feedback, because you then sometimes will overthink and overanalyze. So I think the conversation of feedback we could talk about for a very long time.
Totally. I know. I have so many thoughts going through my mind. I'll try to distill it down. It can be so hard for so many people with external feedback. It's a parent, it's a coach, it's a partner, it's an instructor saying, do this better, do that better. You didn't do this correct. Make adjustments here. Mm-hmm. It's so hard, at least in my experience, because we personalize so much of it. Mm-hmm. And instead of taking, hey, you need to adjust here or explode through your hips here in the weight room, we go, oh, she doesn't think I'm strong enough.
Yeah, I'm doing it wrong. Always doing it wrong.
he always thinks I'm the worst player on the field. Yeah. We personalize so many of these things. And so here's my question for you. You just said over time, I've developed a good relationship with feedback. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest, especially to youth athletes kind of in this high school range, to start to develop a good relationship with feedback? Because it's crucial. It's really, folks, what turns experience into expertise, essentially, or ultimately. So how can especially youth, younger athletes, start to develop a healthy relationship with external feedback?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it, is not taking feedback as personal in a negative way. I think one thing my dad always told me when I was younger was, if the coach is giving you feedback, that means that they care about you.
I love it. I love that.
And he was like, if they don't think you could do something, then they wouldn't ask you to do it. And so that's something that I feel like every time I got feedback, even if my initial reaction was like negative or like, oh, they must not think I'm good, or kind of like have a little bit of attitude about it, I would take a step back and be like, okay, they're telling me this because they think I can do it and they think I can do better. They see potential in me. Let me try. And so I think that's a cycle that you have to kind of consistently do over and over, even still to this day. Sometimes for me, like I don't get feedback as often as I used to, because when I was younger and still developing a lot of these like skills, I was getting a lot more feedback. But now when you get feedback at this level, sometimes it can kind of hurt your pride because you can think that you've got everything figured out. But when you get that feedback, just taking a step back again and be like, okay, the reason why this person is correcting me or helping me is because they want me to be better and I want to be better. So we're essentially on the same team here. So kind of just like reframing that and going through that process of like, accepting it and then trying to apply it and then move forward. And most of the time that feedback helps. And when it's implemented, those people will come back to me and be like, good job. Like, I see that you're trying, or I see that you fixed this or fixed that. And that's always a really rewarding moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, correct me if I'm wrong, it comes down to, do you want to get better or no?
Yeah.
And if you do, it's then utilizing exactly what you're saying, deciphering, okay, is this feedback going to be of benefit to me? Is it going to facilitate my journey of progression? Mm-hmm. Or is this the feedback that I shouldn't be paying attention to? But ultimately, again, it's, do I want to get better? Then utilize the best information that is of hand and find that springboard to help you perform better. I remember distinctly through my PhD, personalizing so much of my mentor's feedback, and it was so frustrating, and I was angry and she sucks and I'm cool, or I didn't say that, but ultimately it was so hard because I personalized so much of it.
Yeah.
But now in hindsight, it's like, that's where I grew 100% the very most in my entire professional life, really kind of personal life, because she was so consistent with providing feedback. Yeah. And sometimes it kind of hurt because it needed to hurt sometimes. Yeah. So starting to develop that at a young age can be, I think, just so, so beneficial.
Yeah. That disconnection part is really, really important. And the more that you can disconnect, like by not taking it personally or being emotional about it, the better off that you'll be. I think also for me, when you know that you're making mistakes or things aren't going your way, sometimes it's a lot easier to receive feedback because you're like, okay, something's not working. But when things are going well and you think you're playing amazing and then you receive feedback, sometimes that's even harder because totally. Like you're like, oh, I think I'm doing great. I'm scoring a lot of goals. We're winning, blah, 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 blah. But it's in those moments that you should still be receiving feedback, because if you want to keep getting better and keep moving forward and keep winning, then you still need to dissect your game and still need to find areas to improve and be consistent in that pattern. And so I think, accepting and receiving feedback in those two different states is also can be very different as well.
Mm-hmm. Quick story to illustrate that beautiful point. I just heard through someone else, I wasn't actually there, but they told me the story of head coach Kalani Sitake. So he's the head coach for BYU football. He was giving a speech and he was telling a story about when BYU beat the University of Utah in 2021 and they broke this streak and it was this huge game for BYU and everyone was elated, including the coach. And in his body language, he was jumping up and down and he was hollering and he was pounding his chest. He's so great in the way he celebrates. Anyways, it was very public and he was on TV doing this because he's on the sideline. He's the head coach. He goes home that night and his wife goes, well, you must have enjoyed that. And he goes, what do you mean? So then she goes, it was all about you, wasn't it? And he's like, whoa. Because the way his body language was being portrayed, it was like, I beat him. It was me. And oh my gosh, like, look at me again, pounding the chest, me, me, me. And she goes, it's a team sport.
Wow. Good
you
her.
Need to make it more about the team. And he's like, it was a humbling moment. We had just won and it brought me down. But it was so beneficial to receive that feedback, because now moving forward in a team oriented environment like football or soccer, it needs to be about the team. And so now he's more team oriented, especially in terms of his celebrations against my alma mater. So
that's a good story.
Where I work. Anyways, great story. So what did we just go over? Responding to feedback. Now we have two more. This next one is so awesome. I love this one. Another very sports psychology specific one. So we have T. Have you ever heard, Ashley, of someone just going through the motions?
Mm-hmm.
in sports, especially. This is the opposite of that. So think on the other end of the spectrum of going through the motions. We are being very totally applied and focused. That's what this is about. Total application and focus. And so you're essentially with this one maximizing the emphasis on this word, quality of reps and attention, not the quantity. So instead of going out and just shooting 100 PKs, you're being very focused and deliberate with the quality of those PKs. Sure, it can be 100 PKs. That's great. But what are we doing on every single rep to get better ball placement, foot placement, strike of the ball? There's so many things that we can be very deeply focused on that will then, the wonderful thing about this is it rewires or continues to wire the brain to build that resiliency and those mental maps that can help us in those moments. I mean, there's so much literature that speaks to this around focus and how, just an example in some of this literature, how a 20-minute highly focused skill session can be way more powerful than an hour or an hour and a half of distracted skill session. And so utilizing things like mindfulness, I know we've mentioned this on this podcast before, Ash, but mindfulness is paying attention in the present moment, non-judgmentally, on purpose. That's what this is. And so utilizing those things with this development, I think is crucial, especially from a psychological standpoint, but it's also obviously going to be of great benefit for us physiologically as well. One thing, and I want to get your insight and your take, that is so important with this one, especially with, I mean, you could argue with adults as well, but especially with like junior high to college kids, is the distraction, especially that they have in media, social media, on phones. And so it's literally turning off distractions, leaving your phone in the locker room, even an hour before you go to practice or before you go to competition, so you can start to enter a training or competition mindset. So you're being very focused and totally applying what this should be from a mental standpoint. What's distracting me? What's holding me back? Oftentimes, especially in today's age, it's cell phones, social media. So getting rid of that and finding where you need to be placing the focus is equally important, but also it's such a key component to this one. So with all that, what's your take? What's been kind of your insight and your experience with this particular one?
Yeah, well, I think it's funny that you mentioned phones because I actually, when I get to the stadium for games, as soon as I get into the locker room, I actually turn off my phone completely. It was a habit that I actually created when I was playing over in Australia because, I don't know, funny rules over there, but because of like sports betting, they make every player put their cell phone in a box and it gets locked during the game.
Wow.
And then we would get our phones back after the game. And I actually kind of really, really liked not having my phone during the game just because, not that I like it was a problem because I was looking at it or whatever, but it just like kind of this like physical representation of I'm turning off everything else and focusing on what's happening now, which is the game. Kind of really helped me like mentally like focus and be very present for the game. So now that's a habit I've been doing ever since, is when I get to the stadium, I text Jeff like, hey, love you. Like, I'll talk to you after. And then I turn my phone off and I do it every single game. And I think it really helps me just like being like very present and very focused and ready for the game. So I thought that was interesting that you brought up phones because I was like, oh, I have an example. But when you're talking about like going through the motions, or like having total application and focus, like a simple example of that for us is like a passing pattern. So essentially what a passing pattern is exactly what it sounds like. It's a pattern that you're in that you pass and it's supposed to like replicate like game scenarios, but it can be very like mundane and it can be very easy to go through the motions, by literally just like passing the ball to the next station, the next line or whatever it is and jogging over to the next line. Or if you have total application and focus and an intention and you want to have a quality passing pattern, you're doing things like double movements, checking your shoulder, paying attention to your spacing, paying attention to the weight of your pass, depending on what this mm-hmm. pass is supposed to replicate. Is this pass supposed to replicate us like moving forward, or is this pass supposed to replicate like us like slowing down and keeping the ball? Like, so like being very intentional about like your actions as an individual in that passing pattern, you're going to get so much more out of it, and you're going to create so many more good habits of like checking your shoulder or doing these double movements that will then be translated into the real game when you, it's not a passing pattern and you actually have to play. But so many times I've been a part of passing patterns. You're like, okay, people are just going through the motions in this passing pattern. We might as well not do it because we're all just going through the motions and it's not intentional. So yeah. I feel like that's a really easy example to kind of talk about, like, all right, is this a quality or is this a quantity thing? And if we're going to make it quality, we need to be doing these little things and be very intentional about these little things in order to get the most out of it.
Yeah. And choosing quality 99.9999% of the time is going to be much better than just the quantity.
Yeah.
I would argue the goats in any sport are really good at this. Mm-hmm. They're really deliberate, again, pun intended, about what they do, when they do it, how they do it. Like no second, no time, no minute is really wasted because they want to get better and they want to continue to be the GOAT. Mm-hmm. And so applying some of this, especially at a young age, can, I think, be so beneficial. I mean, all of these things can be so beneficial, but anyways, okay, so that's the second to last one. We're on our last one of experts, this acronym, as it pertains to deliberate practice. You ready for the last one?
Mm-hmm.
Here's our S, and it stands for specific goals. And so this idea of specificity and being able to provide direction and purpose so you're able to make progress measurably, and it can enhance one's motivation or strengthen motivation as well. Now, here's the caveat with this one. Ashley and I are both huge fans of open goals, which is, I hate to say it's the opposite, but in some aspects of goal setting, it can be the opposite of kind of smart goals or specific goals. Both, ladies and gentlemen, are wonderfully great, just depending on the person and the context. And so, specificity, if that's your thing, and specificity is really great, generally speaking, again, when you tend to get higher up in the skill development realm of things, college athletics, professional athletics, when you're starting out in sport, open goals, according to literature, tends to be maybe a little bit stronger. Like, I just want to have fun today. I want to give my very best effort today. I want to be a really awesome teammate today. Those tend to be a really beneficial through the youth development. Then as we get older, more specificity, again, depending on the person and the context, can be of great benefit. So rather than just focus on specific goals, Ashley, let's just throw goals. Let's just make it goals. I know experts isn't experts. There's not a G at the end. But nonetheless, goals are of the utmost importance. We have objectives. Mm-hmm. We have things we want to accomplish. And we're writing these down daily. We're writing these down weekly. We're thinking about these. We're making strides to be able to accomplish whatever it is we're wanting to accomplish. So I know this is super broad, just as it pertains to goals in general. What's been your experience with either specific or open? Mm-hmm. And creating clarity and momentum around trying to accomplish Ashley's objectives, especially in your professional life.
Yeah, definitely. As you were talking, it reminded me of this quote that I screenshotted from Headspace because I loved it so much. I actually shared it in my weekly email. So if any of you are listening and you're not Ashley Hutch insiders, make sure you subscribe.
That's a big one.
Anyway, the quote says this. We move forward in life by knowing our goal, but we are happy and free as we go when our happiness is not dependent on reaching that goal.
Oh, and I love that.
I thought it was very powerful because like it kind of like explains exactly what you were saying. Like specific goals and open goals both have a place and they're both very important, and you need both of them. It's the goals that help us continue to move forward because we're working for something. We want to reach something, but it's not mm-hmm. the goals that are making us happy or fulfilled in this present moment. And so I think goals specifically are important to give you direction, but it doesn't really necessarily matter exactly how you get there or you work to get there, as long as you're intentional and you're present and you're enjoying what you're doing. Maybe that mm-hmm. goal, maybe like as a part of the path of the journey, you get there and you realize that, okay, this goal isn't actually what I want anymore, or actually I can far supersede this goal, or whatever it is. So I think it's important to have that goal because it gives you direction. And if we're specifically like speaking about like a team, or if this is from a coach's perspective, if you don't have like a goal or direction for your team, that can be specific or open. Maybe it's more general of like, I want every player to feel comfortable in every position, or I want every player to understand our team tactics, or we want to win the championship, whatever it is. It gives you that direction, and that direction and that goal will guide your day-to-day actions. But if you don't have a goal or a direction that you want to go, then your day-to-day actions will be all over the place. So
yeah,
I think it's really important to have goals, whatever they may be, because they give you that direction. But your happiness shouldn't be derived from those goals, because you haven't reached those goals yet, but you want to be happy now. So
yeah. And you may never reach those goals. And so if your happiness depends on that outcome, that's a really precarious situation to be in. One of my all-time favorite quotes is from Nick Saban, Alabama longtime head coach. I think I've shared this on here. It's about the chase, not the capture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what goals are about. It's your progression with the process. How are you throughout this process? Are we getting better incrementally? Are we experiencing falls, pitfalls, and progression? And then hopefully the icing on the cake is the championship. If it's not, wasn't meant to be. But nonetheless, that chase, that process is helping you progress mentally, spiritually, physically, all of those wonderful things. So keeping that the focus is definitely where we should be. And that's one reason why I'm biased towards open goals, is because it allows us to be more present in theory when we're in that chase and when we're in that process, rather than constantly thinking about the championship or the most valuable player becoming that. Yeah. So those are important things, and we can do it in so many different ways, but that's my challenge for you all listening, is to place the focus on the chase rather than the capture. So
yeah. Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We did it, you guys. Experts of deliberate practice. Should we go over them really quickly just so they can hear these again? So deliberate practice, experts is our acronym. Established training techniques, existing skills as building blocks, pushing the envelope, enhancing mental representations, responding to feedback, total application and focus, and then specific goals, or just goals in general. There's our outline or our guide as we go about implementing deliberate practice into our protocols, whatever it might be, whether it's athletic or business or anything else. So there we go.
Nice. Cool. Well, I think last time I started us off with the ditto of the day. Ooh, so yeah. I'm going to let you go first for our ditto of the day for this episode.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just thinking about this. Mine is going to have to be responding to feedback, because it's been so hard for me in developing a healthy relationship to feedback. This is my weakness, folks. I tend to take things a little too personal when I receive feedback from mentors, from colleagues, advisors, et cetera. I've gotten a lot better at it. But like the quote unquote boss in my workplace has never been my best friend throughout my life. I would like them to be better friends of mine because I'm going to continue to have bosses. And so responding to feedback, especially external feedback, is so, so important. And I've recognized this personally in my own life. If I can be very deliberate and intentional about responding to external feedback in a healthier way, it makes such a huge difference. So that's my ditto of the day, is trying to be better, especially specifically with external feedback.
Nice. You got this. Yeah. I believe in you.
Yeah.
My ditto of the day is going to have to be the second to last one, total application and focus. When we're talking about specifically quality over quantity, I think when we can make that shift, I know like growing up, the whole like 10,000 hours and make sure you're spending all this time practicing. I think it's important. I think there's a place for it. For me, like getting reps always helps like build my confidence and stuff. But there's also a place for making sure that you have quality training or quality time focused on whatever it is that you're trying to improve on. And I don't think quality equals perfection. It doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but it does mean that you're very intentional and you're doing the little things to get better and doing the little things to learn and to grow and being very, very present and very, very intentional. And then you're going to get more out of it. So I think for me, my ditto of the day would have to be like finding those moments to actually like apply that quality over quantity.
I love it. So important. Thanks for sharing your ditto of the day.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Awesome. We did part two, deliberate practice. That was fun.
Yes, part two. Go back and listen to part one if you missed it. And as always, please like, share, subscribe, and comment if you have any comments or feedback, because we're both trying to get better at feedback.
We would love the feedback.
Please welcome. We welcome all the feedback. All right. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Adios.
Bye.